I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Alex, we're live, pal.
Oh, yes. No, we are going live, friend, as they always say on this show. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the A-Side Live Chat. This is not sweet, sweet, dulcet tones of regular host Jose Youngs. This is guest host Alexander K. Lee. It's me. I am very excited to be here. Of course, Jose is on site at UFC Apex in Las Vegas for all the UFC 260 coverage that you will be getting this week. But I am very excited today because the top team in the game is back. It is two Alex, two Fierce today as I am joined by the cool Alex, Alex Savas.
Two Alex, two Furious. I almost quit when I saw that, but go ahead.
just wait for Alex and Alex Tokyo Drift if they let us do this again. And then, of course, the man on the ones and twos, the truck, E. Casey Lydon.
Uh-oh, stage fright.
There he is.
Oh. Happy birthday, AK. Happy birthday.
It is not my birthday.
Happy birthday.
It is not my birthday. This has to stop. We have colleagues of ours on Twitter messaging me, DMing me, when they see your comments and telling me happy birthday. Do you know how rude it is to tell people, please, it's not my birthday, shut up? It's a very rude and harsh thing to have to say, but I really have no other. Anyway, yeah, so guys, you guys know the deal. You guys tune in every week with Jose. We are here to answer your questions and comments, everything related to UFC 260, everything related to UFC Vegas 22, which went down, everything else, all the other craziness that's going down in the MMA world. I know we have some questions on the site. We got some questions on social media. Of course, if you're watching on YouTube live right now, leave your comments. What is up, Jessica Crystal Crew? Crystal squad. Yes, two crystals, not three, because one crystal for Alex Savas, one for Casey. I am not a crystal believer, as we know. And since I'm hosting the show, I am allowed to make this a crystal-free zone. When Jose comes back, you guys have all the crystal talk you want. But thank you, Jessica, for tuning in. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Thank you for all of our podcast listeners. Casey, is there anything... Already? I've been hosting for 2 minutes.
Well, you've been hosting for 2 minutes. Cool Alex has already turned in her letter of resignation, apparently.
Oh, yeah. Stop it. Stop it.
Dude, your birthday is off to a horrible start. I just got to say.
It's, you know, I'm not a fan of them. Right. I'll play the breath music. That'll make it work. All right, guys. What do we got here? Yeah, let's... Hello, Joseph Boza, regular viewer, regular listener.
Why is there an LOL?
Always appreciate it.
I'm feeling this is passive aggressive.
No. That's a... You know what I learned, guys? I'm old, but you know what I learned is that a lot of the kids these days is they use the LOL as like a, it's almost like a nervous. It's like, you know, you see someone you haven't seen in a while. It's like, you just kind of awkward smile and laugh. That's like what the LOL is now.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah. I have a few millennial friends, and when they text me, everything's all like, hey, you want to have lunch today? LOL. I don't get it. Like, or, everything's right? LOL.
Or the opposite, or like you message them with a question and they just answer LOL and it's like, no, I'm so this is like a yes or no. We're trying to make plans here, like what? I don't know, guys.
Millennial talk with AK.
Who's not a millennial? Wait, Casey, you're not a millennial technically.
I'm right at the border. I'm right at the line between millennial and Gen X.
I'm in there.
You're millennial. You're definitely millennial. Me,
yeah.
I don't know.
Okay. I'm on the younger end of millennials. I think people think millennials are a lot younger than they are.
Yeah. Right. Up to like 40 or something.
I think we have a pretty strong millennial viewership, listenership, I would guess. I could be wrong. Again, some of these people could be, I don't know these people. These could be, I see a lot of our regular viewers commenting. I know these guys could be children for all I know, but we'll try and keep it PG. Casey, do you have our first question?
Yeah, we do, but we're talking about other stuff right now.
I don't know how the show works.
Do I look tired? Do I look, my eyes extra baggy today?
No. I think because you usually have your glasses on, maybe people
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Are noticing your eyes more. I don't know.
Oh, true.
Yeah.
Oh, there it is. Look at that. He brightened up. See, John Daniels, he brightened up just for you. Oh, okay. Well, let's tone it down a little bit. Okay. Now we're going too far the other way. Yeah, now it's just now it's just off-putting. For those listening, Casey's eyes got as big as a cartoon character there, and it was very disturbing. And I'm glad that you did not. And now
we can't monetize any of this because
All right. I think we might just, you know, we'll fix it in post. We'll fix it in post. It's fine.
All right. First question.
Yeah.
You're the host.
You know what? I have to read it. Well, no, listen, I didn't want to read. No, because it's from a young man named Jed Mishu, who some people may have heard of in the MMA community. And he says, is Cool Alex our dear Alex view tomorrow? I'm apparently have been conscripted to battle Jed once again in the Ultimate Battle of Good and Evil on Between the Links tomorrow. So watch for that, people. Between the Links live after the UFC 260 press conference, I believe. That's our tentative plan for now, where I will look to pick up my third win in, I believe, will be like my 16th or 17th Between the Links.
You're the only person in double-digit losses. It's very impressive.
I just keep coming back. That third win is going to be sweet, and it's going to happen tomorrow. And if Alex Savage could be there to back me up, that would be great. But no promises.
I mean, really,
if you could just fight Jed for me, I think that would be great. But I've been called out once again.
Speaking of fighting, it's like once I get my second vaccine shot, I gotta find my way to get me some fight circus action. I don't know. I'm gonna go to Thailand.
I don't think you even need vaccine. I think John Nutt from Full Metal Dojo will smuggle you in. He'll smuggle you. Don't worry about it. I don't want to question the safety protocol of Full Metal Dojo and Fight Circus. I'm just saying I don't believe all those people are vaccinated and necessarily following the most highly suggested COVID-19 protocol. But how dare I question that Full Metal Dojo claim? At Circus, by the way, coming back in April.
Yay. Fight, what's it? Fisting for dollars.
Fisting, I didn't want to say it. This is a children's show.
No. What do you mean? It's like punching. What are you talking about,
bro? Like punching. Oh, yeah, I know. Well, yeah, no, you're right.
Jeez, man.
There's only one way that could be interpreted.
Yeah. Get your head out of the Canadian gutters.
Here we go. A question. Thank you from a regular listener, viewer, Scott McCrae. Thank you for Scott. Strawweight potential. Can you speculate on the potential of Miranda Maverick and Kay Hansen? Are they all future top 15 strawweights? Do you see a possible contender for a title out of this group? This group being a group of two, I assume. Alex Hobbs, I'll go to you first. Miranda Maverick, 23 years old, I think. Kay Hansen, I believe is 21. Only 20. She's 21 now. Yeah. Obviously, I think Miranda's only fought once in the UFC. Kay has also only fought, was it only the Jinyu? She's fought twice now.
Twice, and then she lost her last fight. Yeah.
What do you think? What do you think, Alex? What do you think of these two so far from what you've seen in UFC and Invicta? You know, what do you think of their potential? And
real quick, Miranda is a flyweight, not a strawweight. So.
Oh, Miranda's a flyweight. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, she's fighting Jillian Robinson, right? On Saturday. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a flyweight. Okay, but either way, do you see them as top 15 in their respective divisions?
Not yet. I think it's too soon to tell, but you know, these are when we interview like vets, you know, UFC vets, people have been around forever. They're always talking about that new up and coming group, the people who grew up watching UFC and who started training MMA. They didn't start with, you know, wrestling and then sort of, you know, started working in striking later on. These people have been training MMA since they could probably walk. So I think, you know, there's going to be a whole shift eventually where like, obviously the vets are going to get older and retire, and then all of a sudden we're just going to have like this massive amount of MMA full rounded fighters. So I don't know like what's going to really separate each other, you know, when their skill sets are very similar. Kay Hansen, if I'm going to pick somebody who I think is going to go like really far, I'm going to pick Miranda Maverick. I mean, one, the name is just like insane in MMA. Like your name is Miranda Maverick. Like, I don't know how you beat that, but, she's also strikes me as the kind of person who will stop at nothing. Like she has that personality to me. She's going for her PhD, which is like nuts at the same time as, you know, her getting into the UFC. I mean, this is the kind of person that I think people will look up to for a very long time. I just see her with massive star potential.
Casey, when you grow up, do you want to be like Miranda Maverick?
Yes, I was at Miranda Maverick's. I'm pretty sure I was at her, at least her Invicta debut, maybe her MMA debut. I'm not sure. Or she's like 1-0. Man, like when I first saw her training and I first saw her fight, I was like, that lady is going to be a star. And I actually, the two fighters mentioned here, I think Miranda Maverick has higher potential. Although I think Kay Hansen is also very good too. Beyond Kay Hansen's, her fighting skills, I'm kind of just, I'm relieved. I don't want to get into details about it. It's more of her story, but she kind of had some, an overbearing parent controlled her life, especially through her teen years, kind of getting her ready for that transition to a professional fighter. And I don't think it was, she admits it was not good for her. So I think this adult, young lady, young adult Kay Hansen is going to be very interesting. And I think she just had pulled up due to an injury very recently from a fight, I think last week. She was supposed to fight Cheyenne Bays, and then she was supposed to. So I'm not sure what happened with that. I don't know if it's an injury or hopefully. Well, I don't know. I don't know what it. Hopefully, it's, I don't know. It's just bad. I don't know. hopefully she's okay. I was like, no. Hopefully it's just Corona. I was like, no, that doesn't make sense either. Hopefully she's okay.
Whatever it is, hopefully let's
yeah.
Do that.
So, but they're both obviously very good fighters, but I do think Maverick has the higher potential. But who knows? I like them both.
Now, let me break it down for both you guys. Okay, so the question is, top 15, could it be in the top 15 eventually? Scott doesn't really put a timetable on the question. So let's take a look here. This is the UFC's top 15. We don't have to look at the whole top 15, but breaking into, let's say, the bottom five of that top. You know, Casey, you love top 15 rankings. You always say how much. I've heard you say 11 to 15 is just as important as 1 to 10. I think you've said that many times. So right now, 11 to 15 at strawweight, so this will be Miranda Maverick. Oh, sorry, this will be for Kay Hansen. Will be is a Mackenzie Dern, Angela Hill, Vierna Janjoba, and I'm ruining that, and Amanda Lemos, and Felice Herrick. She's still ranked. Which for her. So this is why I want to. Like get a little deeper into the question, because it is different, the respective rankings. Because I do think that's a top 15. Like I could see Kay Hansen taking that 15 spot by the end of the year if she gets a couple of wins. Because as we said, Felice Herrick's been inactive, of course, you know, with injuries and other things. And at flyweight, your bottom five in the top 15 is Andrea Lee, Antonina Shevchenko, Tyler Santos, Macy Barber, and Jillian Robertson. I think that's a little bit tougher to break into right now. So for me, I guess, yes, I guess I'm leaning a little more towards Kay Hansen. Not necessarily, I know, Alex, how excited you are about Maverick as a prospect and her talent. So this is not speaking towards their talents. This is other fighters' talents. This is just looking at kind of their road to get into one of the top 15s. So I think Hansen has a little bit of an easier path. But either way, I think by the end of the year, yeah, if both women are active, they could sneak in there. I think flyweight's a little tougher.
I think just the opposite. I thought Maverick's got a better road to the top 15. I think.
Well, she's already fighting number 15.
This is true. That's good logic. Well, I guess what
Watch MMA regular, Alex? Just a question. I'm not
you know, speaking. You know, cool Alex brings up a good point. What if Jillian Robertson wins? I was assuming my fellow Canadian would win, and that's why I was like, oh, and that's gonna, you know, that loss is gonna bump Miranda Maverick back further. She's gonna have to work hard to get back. So my comment, there was a logic to it. There was a logic, sure. I assure you.
All right, next question.
But either way, both ones to watch for sure. Miranda Maverick and Kay Hansen have long careers ahead of them. Woodley, another one from Scott. Woodley versus Luque, is the outcome predictable? They're fighting, of course, this Saturday at UFC 260. Are they they're the co-main, are they not?
I think now they are. Yeah.
Scott says, after watching Tyron Woodley's last two fights, I almost want to bet everything that Vicente Luque will get his hand raised. But this thing, and that means Woodley will go out and KO Luque in the first round, right? Or will this fight go exactly like Woodley's last three bouts? That's a good question. First of all, of course, the usual disclaimer, never bet on MMA. That is always my number one advice.
I think
go ahead. Yeah, Casey, what do you think?
I think the question here really is not really about Woodley, but is Luque on the level of Colby Covington, Gilbert Burns, and Kamaru Usman? Because that's who we're talking about, who Woodley lost to. Woodley hasn't lost to Joe Welterweight. I don't know. You know, it's like, you know, he's losing to guys who are fighting for the title or 1 and 2. He's not losing to bums. He's losing the top of the top. And honestly, he's not getting he's getting outworked. I don't really think he's getting, well, the Covington fight, I mean, he did break a rib in the fight. But generally, like, he still walks out of the fight looking normal. You know, his face isn't, like, you know, falling apart. He just gets outworked in the Usman fight, the Burns fight, and the Covington fight. In all three of those fights, did he spend most of those 25 minutes each fight on his butt or on his back?
From what on his butt or against the against the cage.
Yeah, so
I think that's the sight that people really hate to see, is when he backs himself up against the cage and kind of just stays there. Mm-hmm. That's the Woodley that people are really concerned about.
So of all those last 75 minutes of fighting, would I be accurate to say maybe, I don't know, 70 minutes of those seem to be like Woodley either on his back with his back against the cage or the mat? It felt like it, right?
Yes, I think that that's certainly how I would perceive it. Yeah.
Now, can Luque do the same thing? Is that the way to beat Woodley, or would Luque just be able to just outstrike Woodley and actually kind of finish him on his feet? Do we think Woodley has lost all of that, or is it just like a really heavy pressure wrestler is actually the guys that beat Woodley?
No, well, I think that's what Scott is asking. I think it's like you said, the level of competition you just mentioned, super high. Burns, Covington, Usman, of course, it could be anyone. It's the way he lost that's so disturbing. I think, I think people thought, we had this conversation before the Covington fight. We said, look, this is the fight that's going to bring back the old tire. You know, he hates Colby Covington. If he cannot get up for this fight, you know, what fight is he going to be super motivated for? Right. So I think the fact that he seems so tentative, yes, got outworked, you know, credit to Colby Covington, you know, of course, just for being the better fighter that night, but it was what they saw in that fight. It was what they saw in the Burns fight, what they saw in the Usman fight, that it's so cliche, but that inability to pull the trigger. And when you're 38, I think he's a month away from being 39 years old. And you have more, and more importantly, he has a lot of fight mileage on him and combat sports mileage. Of course, a long amateur wrestling career. He's got a lot of combat sports mileage on him. And you do wonder, regardless of who he's fighting, is that in him anymore? I bet he's crushing it. I bet training is the same old Tyron, probably maybe better than ever. When he steps into that cage, it's a completely different beast. I'm sure most fighters would agree. And can he turn that switch on anymore? So, and against an aggressive guy like Luque, is this going to send him right back into his shell? I don't know. Alex Savas, what do you think?
Yeah. I mean, what Casey said, like, we're going to see if Vicente Luque is on the same level as Burns, Usman, and Covington. And I think that this is going to be probably the pivotal moment where we discover what Woodley's really all about. I mean, because I don't think Luque's on the same level yet. So if we see the exact same thing happen to Woodley again, then I think maybe, we're going to start watching Woodley really drop in the rankings and just find that match that's good for him. You know, I mean, I don't think we're talking about retirement yet. I know we always talk about retirement whenever people get, you know, three losses in a row and they're getting older, but like, he's still ranked, what, 7, 8? I don't know. Yeah.
He is so, seventh, I believe. So
you're seventh best in the world, hypothetically. I mean, just talking UFC, obviously. That's pretty freaking remarkable, you know, like, even if you're 30th in the world, you know, best at something, like, I don't think you just throw in the towel. I mean, if he's done, he's done. But I think he still has a lot left in him, personally.
Alex, can we get a fight prediction? Can I get a 3 days in advance fight prediction?
Sure, I'll pick Woodley. Let's see, Woodley by decision.
Wow. Okay, Woodley by decision. So you think we're going to see a little bit of the old Woodley back? You think, or also as you kind of mentioned, that Luque maybe isn't at that level of the guys who beat Woodley lately.
Well, Luque isn't. I mean, Luque isn't. That's the problem right now. Luque has to prove he's at that level. When Luque has fought the elite welterweights, he has lost. And I mean, no one likes to say it because we all love Luque as a great action fighter, but he is a very high level gatekeeper, much like we thought of Derek Brunson. He's really good, but he just loses to those guys at the very top. And Luque's been the same way. What are his two losses?
Stephen Thompson, top five. And Leon Edwards, who wasn't top five, I think, at the time, but obviously is a top five fighter now. So, yeah, those are his two UFC losses.
So this is actually great matchmaking by the UFC, honestly. This gives a chance for Luque to, you know, establish himself as an elite welterweight, not just a really good action welterweight, and to see if Woodley's still an elite welterweight too. A lot of people crap on Woodley and stuff, but like you mentioned it too, AK, dude's old. He's just old. And he's going to lose a step, and I don't know. And we'll see if age is going to catch up. I'm kind of with Savas. I'm still picking Woodley because I'm still a believer. If obviously Willie at his prime, I think easily beats Luque, but I don't think we don't have Willie at his prime. So we'll see what's left.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
And by the way, when we say old, we mean sober. So he's venerated. We mean sober. So he's going to step into that cage under the scale on Friday, looking like $1 million.
Oh, yeah.
So I wish when I am Tyron Woodley's age that I look like Tyron and look and perform like Tyron Woodley. But we have to be realistic here in fight years. There's a lot of mileage. And he hasn't been the same guy. That's just being straight. We keep it real with you guys. We keep it real with the A-side viewers and listeners. So. Oh, I like this question. Scott again. Okay. Well, you know what, Scott? This is Scott's show. Scott, but this is a good question. Laura Senko on her way to stardom as an MMA commentator. Laura Senko has been color commentating LFA fight cards for the last few months when she isn't working UFC fights. Her commentary is wonderful. She makes smart, concise points and is effortlessly funny and entertaining. Do you think we will see her working as a commentator for the UFC before the end of 2021? Do we think it'll happen? Also, yeah. One, should it happen? It should have happened a year ago. Will it happen? Absolutely. Yeah, I actually wager it will happen. I got a shout out, first of all. Sorry, guys, I take this off topic for a second, or somewhat an aside. Our own TSN in Canada is having its first all-women's broadcast of a Toronto Raptors basketball game. So shout outs to Kayla Gray, Kia Nurse, and the rest of the crew, Kate Burness. I'm going to leave somebody out, I know. So I feel it's Amy Odebert. We are having, and this, again, something should have happened a long time ago.
Play-by-play, too? Who are,
they're doing play-by-play, yes, everything. Analysts, it's full all-women's on-screen team. Neat. I'm so happy. These women are overqualified. These are women who have played basketball in the past, who are current basketball players, WNBA All-Star, and of course, just a qualified journalist and analyst. So it's very exciting. But to bring it back to Laura Senko, yeah, she's more than qualified for it. It's funny how many people don't know that she fought. I don't know so many people who don't know that she has a pro MMA fight, which, what? Again, is more
really?
Than
it. I was there. I shot video of it. I was at her fight.
Casey, people
I'm everywhere.
Know. People, she's going to sound so insulting to other MMA fighters, but she's so intelligent. She presents herself so well that people don't realize that, yes, she herself was once an MMA fighter. So she comes from a very legit background. And even if she hadn't, I mean, this is in addition to the hundreds of hours of footage of MMA that she's watched, live events she's attended. I think anyone who's heard Laura speak and like I said, do LFA commentary, her work on Contender Series, she's more than qualified to do play-by-play. Sorry, I didn't mean to jump all over answering the question. But yeah, I'm very excited at the prospect of Laura Senko getting her shot. Alex Savas, what do you think?
So the way that I look at society right now is that there's two types of companies, right? There's companies that will do the right thing on their own, and there's companies that will do the right thing when facing enormous amounts of pressure. I think the UFC needs to face that pressure. I think the media needs to be questioning Dana White at press conferences about this. Why have we not seen a female commentator cage side yet? I think the fans need to be tweeting. I think we need to be talking about this, and this is great already, because I don't think the UFC is going to make that decision on their own. Even given the current climate of things, because like you said, it should have happened a year, two, 3 years ago, whatever. So let's start pushing that pressure. You know, next time that I'm at a press conference, I'll ask Dana White. You know, like, people need to be putting that pressure, because they will eventually have to do the right thing. If they don't want to by now, that's whatever. That's their problem. I'm sure that the conversation has come up. I'd be shocked if that conversation hasn't come up in the UFC yet. And for some reason, it hasn't gotten done. So put that pressure on them.
Ooh.
Wow. Reggaeton air horn also would have been appropriate, Casey. That was... This is why, there we go. Perfect. See, this is why she's the cool Alex, because I'm very passive. I'm very like, oh, well, no, it'd be swell if this happened. Alex Savas is saying, I am going to make this happen.
I'm just too cynical. I just don't believe people will do the right thing on their own.
Dana White better not see me because it's on site. It is on site with Dana.
Laura Senko clearly is qualified to be a fight commentator, a color commentator during the fight, sitting cage side. She's obviously qualified for it. She does a great job. My only worry is the UFC's Dana White in particular, his obsession with having UFC fighters be the color commentator. Remember, they got rid of Jimmy Smith, a great commentator. I mean, great color commentator. They got rid of him because, well, you're not a fighter for the UFC. Look who they have. Felder, Bisping, DC, who else? Cruz. They got rid of Hardy, but who's that? Who else is color commentator?
Oh, I was totally just blanked out there. Did you not say everyone? You said Bisping, Hardy, Cormier, Felder.
That it?
Who'd you miss? You didn't miss anyone? Didn't you? I think you got everyone. Yeah. I feel bad for leaving someone out. But
Rogan's kind of like the celebrity color commentator. The issue is like, Laura, like you said, people don't know she fought MMA and she didn't do it in the UFC. So I hope that doesn't hold her back, because
I just had a horrible thought of her having to play like the John Anik role and kind of mediate like Joe Rogan and Cormier comedy night. And I just got a migraine. I mean, don't get me wrong, she could handle those knuckleheads. I'm just saying, it's, if that was like her debut, I would dread it. I'd be like, I wish she would get a chance for a two person call first. I think that would be great, but I don't know. They seem obsessed with three person group boosts.
Dude, one of my biggest pet peeves always of fans is how nobody knows the difference between the play-by-play and the color commentator.
It does blur. It does blur sometimes.
In the UFC, it does especially. Yeah, the way the UFC does commentating. Yeah.
Yeah. It's more clear in some other sports. In the UFC, sometimes it just depends kind of who's talking. And
Yeah, usually it's just people talking and then Anik reading promos. Yeah. That's it.
But yes, people, if you want to see Laura Senko in the commentary booth, let your voice be heard. Otherwise, Alex Savas will take care of it. Don't worry about that. Yeah, but I mean, it'll help if you guys hit Dana White up on Twitter, social media, make those demands, get those comments up on the screen during fight night, like poor Casey's been trying to do for the last 2 years.
Jeez. All right, here we go. We're going to the YouTuber comments.
Oh dear.
Oh God.
Joseph Boza, speaking for the people, apparently. He says, fans are, can I say this word, Casey, on our podcast / YouTube?
Oh, it's encouraged.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Fans are pissed. Woo. I put a little extra sauce on it. Fans are pissed that Volkanovski Ortega is off. The only reason is that they can't take Alex as the featherweight champion. Why can't fans take Alex seriously as champ? I saw on Twitter he's a fake / fraud champ. Well, I mean, if Twitter said it, then so it is.
Is this why they're pissed, though?
This is one of those loaded questions where it's like, I feel weird answering it, because I feel like depending how I answer it, it's almost like I'm agreeing with what Joseph. Thank you for the question, Joseph. Let's take this point by point. I don't think that's the only reason that people are upset about not getting to see it. It's a great fight. It's a great fight. I think there's a lot of Ortega fans out there, and I think anyone who kind of was like halfway off the bandwagon got back on with that great performance against Zombie. But I mean, no, I was going to throw it to you guys in a second, but I for one, I'm big on the Volkanovski bandwagon. I will say I'm one of the big defenders that he won both fights. I mean, the first one was clear. I hate that the second one was so close that people were like going back to the first one and saying that that was a win for Holloway, which is like, guys, just rewatch that one. That one wasn't close. It wasn't like a super exciting fight, but Volkanovski clearly won. Second one, much better argument he made for Holloway. But I don't know, Alex Savas, do you feel like that there's that much resentment for Volkanovski? I don't know if, again, I don't know how much you're reading these social media responses to Volkanovski's reign and whatnot, but what's your vibe on that?
Yeah, no, I'm getting the same vibe as Joseph Boza here. People love Max Holloway, right? I mean, he is just like one of the all-time most likable fighters, and
of course,
for him to lose a title fight twice by close decision, like, it pissed a lot of people off. Whether that's justified, no, I'm with you. I'm on the Volkanovski bandwagon 1,000% too. And the reason I think if people are pissed that Volkanovski Ortega is off is, one, because it was a bomb fight, but two, also, I think people want to see the title change hands. And maybe, I don't know, get him out of there for some reason. I just feel so bad because I feel like if any other circumstances, if Volkanovski had won this title by first round knockout, people would be on board. Volkanovski is such an amazing person. He's an amazing fighter. And it just, it sucks that he's got to get all of this heat because he beat a very likable guy, you know, unfortunately.
Yeah, this is one of those things where, like, the popularity didn't transfer over. So, you know, that's what we like to see. So a likable champion fighter beats another likable champion. It's like, oh, the popularity should transfer over. Instead, it was, like, pure filtered through the MMA thing of pure hatred and came out the other end very poorly for Volkanovski. Casey, what do you think?
It's weird for the hate for Volkanovski. I thought Volkanovski won the first fight against Holloway. I thought he lost the second fight against Holloway. I thought they were both obviously very close, but Volkanovski got the decision. I get Volkanovski is still a champion, and that's why this fight for Ortega was so important, because this would have I guess he's a bit of a paper champion. I think this fight would have legitimized his championship, and we're just pissed that we don't get to see that resolution. I think pissed is really just a replacement for sad, just bummed. And I think that's why we can't take Alex seriously as a champ, because we just feel like, you know, he did it, win that clean. And I want to kind of compare this to, say, John Jones versus Reyes. I feel like just as many people thought Reyes won that fight, but we still consider John Jones, you know, John Jones, because he had all that previous win. So he had a lot of history coming into that. And Volkanovski just didn't have that long history of dominant wins to kind of go, well, okay, you know, everyone gets a freebie, you know, a bad decision that goes in their favor. But I think the biggest reason fans should be pissed, and I know we don't need to get into it big time, but the bubble got burst. They caught the dang virus in Vegas. And that is a giant issue. This is what this was the whole Ottman and the potato bag thing was. Because they broke the bubble. You know, right. Like, that's why the whole thing was like he got released because he broke COVID protocols. Somebody broke COVID protocols at the UFC in the bubble and caused the entire, but I'm assuming have they said officially Brad Riddell got COVID too?
Or Brad Riddell said he himself posted on social media. He said he tested negative. As far as he knows, he said twice he tested negative. So I don't know if it's someone else in his
camp
team. Yeah. And not even necessarily tested positive, but they, like you said, maybe they broke protocol and the UFC was aware of that. If anyone, I don't think he archived it, unfortunately. I don't think he made a formal post because he did it like an Instagram story. But yeah, Brad Riddell said something to the effect of, as far as I know, I did not test positive. So I don't know what he's very, obviously very frustrated with the situation. He was supposed to fight Gilbert Gillespie this past Saturday. Now we don't know what, you know, the status of that bout is going to be if they reschedule. So yeah. So Brad Riddell, of course, traveling from the Oceanic region, Volkanovski, of course, a champion from the Oceanic region. Now there's reports. We don't know for sure. Shane Young, supposed to be fighting Omar Morales this Saturday. As far as we know, the fight is still on. The UFC still has it on their broadcasting schedule, but there are reports that they want to do further testing. So we don't know. So that's three fighters from the Oceanic regions who I know at least a couple of them at least sometimes train together. So we don't know. It's a very, like you said, it's a very strange, kind of scary situation.
Yeah, I mean,
where did this happen? At what point did the chain of protocol break down? We have no idea.
And this was like just a couple of weeks ago in Fight Island. This was like a big deal. Like, oh, they released a fighter, blah, blah, blah. It was like a big deal. And the same thing happened here in Vegas. And we're kind of like just him, you know, oh, whatever, you know, we'll reschedule the fight, you know. I don't know. It's just, to me, it's a bit, very big deal. But obviously the UFC doesn't want to make it a big deal because
UFC, I just want to remind people, UFC 261 tickets will be on sale for 15,000 seats sold out, five star Veterans Coliseum, and UFC 262 tickets will go on sale for that event soon at Toyota Center in Houston, 19,000 max capacity. So there you go.
If you see Jose Young's there, give him a hug.
Oh my goodness.
We'll edit that part out. We won't.
Well, yeah, we'll fix it in post. John Danion wants to know, any success getting any information about Ottman's package from Abu Azaitar? We must know what was in that package. So obviously Abu Azaitar is fighting. Excuse me, he's fighting this Saturday against. Is he fighting Barrio? He's fighting Marc-Andre Barrio, I believe.
Ottman's fighting this weekend.
Abu is fighting his brother.
Oh, his brother.
This will be Abu's first fight in, I think, almost like 2 years. 2019. So late 2019. So I imagine there will be more questions this week. We don't have an answer to this. I would just tell John, tune into Media Day tomorrow. I don't know. I don't think I was going to be there. Do you have the media? It should just be the main card, right?
I don't actually have who's going to be on it right now in front of me.
All right. Either way, Abu Azatar will be present. I know someone will speak to him. I would say keep your ears to the and maybe someone. But right now they were joking around. What did they say? What did the manager say? So there's like potatoes or something like that. Or as Otman who said it was potatoes. I don't know. So joking around with that. Yeah, we don't know. The UFC seems to have lost interest in investigating or at least let us know what it was. But yeah, I don't think.
But was it a boy potato or a girl potato?
Oh my God. Don't stop. That's not stop. No, this isn't one of those. Stop it. Please don't go. Please. We need to go.
Am I going to mute myself? I got to mute myself. All right.
Viewers, anyone watching live, Cool Alex is not going anywhere. Please don't turn off the stream. Oh, there we go. From our own dear, dear Jose Youngs, taking a moment out of his busy, insanely busy schedule to say, this is now a podcast about soup. Okay, well, he's the boss. He's the regular host. Cool Alex, since you are from Chicago, what is the most overrated soup and bread combo?
Okay, for those who don't know,
you don't know that Chicago is the city of soup.
So it is the city of soup, yeah.
So go on.
It's not the city of soup. And the best pizza from Chicago you will find at Chicago Pizza and Oven Grinders on Clark. Thank you for the question, Jose Youngs.
So Alex.
Thank you, young Jose.
Well, hold on. Oh. Alex.
My ears are tripping up.
What is your favorite soup from Chicago?
I'm not answering Chicago soup questions. Mm-mm.
We have the decision.
Do not tarnish my city
of soup.
Wait, are you against soup in general?
No, because listen, there's an episode of New Girl where they're talking about Chicago because you know how Winston and Nick are from Chicago, and Winston goes, Chicago, city of soup. And they just like move on from there. Like nobody, it's not known as the city of soup by any other circumstance. The writers just like went rogue on this episode and just decided to call it the city of soup. And now, you know, Jose and Casey just really run with it.
Chicago, yeah, city of soup.
You photoshopped that whole thing. We were in Houston.
There we go. We're good. Thanks for the question, Jose.
Deep dish pizza. What's the popcorn where they mix the caramel and the Chicago-style popcorn? And,
yeah, I don't like that. I don't want to mix that.
And soup. Chicago-style popcorn is the bomb. Shout outs in the YouTube if you guys love Chicago-style popcorn. That stuff is the bomb. John Danian wants us to know, do you think the names – I got to preface these things. So heading in, of course, to Stipe's rematch with Francis Ngannou in the main event of UFC 260 this Saturday. John Danian asks, do you think the names on Stipe's resume solidify him as the heavyweight GOAT? Or do you think that in order to surpass his achievements, a heavyweight champ must break the 3 title defense record? Well,
did he
to surpass the situation, he owns the record. That's his record.
Yeah.
Yes. He. Right. Yeah. I guess he's asking, does he need to do more, to go do more than that? But again, it's a little confusing question. Yes, so he already has the record. He then lost the title to Cormier and then won it back. So this will be his first defense of his second reign. Cool, Alex, what do you think?
Second defense. He beat
this will be the second
DC defense. In the rematch too.
Oh, he won it back and then beat him. That's correct. Yeah. So this will be the second defense of his second reign. I'll throw out some of the names. Let's look what we got here. I'll just go from the UFC notable names. Roy Nelson, Gabe Gonzaga, Mark Hunt, Arlovski, Fabricio Werdum, Overeem, JDS, Ngannou, and Cormier twice, and possibly Ngannou again this Saturday. So, Savas, is that the GOAT right there?
Oh, I hate GOAT questions. Like,
me too. I'm
sure.
Thanks, John.
Yeah,
thanks, John.
Sure. Stipe's the GOAT. I don't know. Sure. Just like it's so irrelevant to me because it's just it can go a million different directions. I mean. Yeah, as of right now, sure, Stipe is the GOAT. I don't know what else we have to do.
Alex, are you a believer in the GSP mentality of you're really the best fighter on that given night, and that's really all that matters? Any other talk is silly.
I like that. That makes sense, yeah.
Actually, I like that a lot, too, because I don't really understand the GOAT question either because, like, are we talking, from a certain era? I mean, like... Like, when do you become the goat? Are you always the goat? Because obviously when Stipe, when he got, you know, knocked out by Stefan Struve, he wasn't the goat that day. So, I mean, how do we, I don't know when we decide when he became the goat and when you're solidified, or is it kind of more like, you know, kind of, I don't know, employee.
Like, to me, the GOAT, the conversation would mean, like, okay, it's the end of MMA. MMA is no longer in existence. Let's look back at who was the greatest of all time. Like, that's what a GOAT talk means to me. Like, okay, basketball's over. There's no more basketball in the world. Was Michael Jordan or LeBron James the GOAT? Because neither are playing anymore, and nobody in the world's playing basketball anymore. So that's how the GOAT should work.
I think,
yeah, look, I'll go ahead, Casey.
I think so much of this GOAT conversation is so dependent on what happens this Saturday. I think a lot of it with Stipe, I think for the most part, I mean, Nagano's the favorite, but I think we should, for the most part, we go, okay, Stipe fought Nagano early in his career. He was only 4 years into his professional career. And Stipe obviously has big cardio wrestling issues that fight. Is... Now that we're going to, hopefully we get a Francis Ngannou that's more mature, and that we're going to see a prime Francis Ngannou rather than, you know, a prospect kind of fighting in the heavyweight title fight as he did in the first time. Can Stipe beat this kind of prime version of Francis Ngannou? And I think if he does, then, the GOAT question will be, statistically, I think he is the GOAT, but image wise, or kind of like, I don't know, the way you feel. I just don't see Stipe as a GOAT, but I don't feel it yet because he just doesn't have that aura that, say, you know, that the Fedor had, or even like Nogueira, or even Lesnar's. You know, he doesn't have that aura about him. And I think a lot of what the GOAT status kind of is, a lot of it is that.
Yeah, so much of it is optics, right? I mean, look, we have people that think Conor McGregor is the greatest fighter of all time. So there you go. If that tells you anything about how much of his perception and personality and how you present yourself. John wants to clarify. Casey, I don't know if you saw it. He wants to clarify his question. We have an addendum to the question. He meant. John, we normally don't allow this. You're on such the nice. You've been banned so many times before. I don't know, Nana, why you keep pushing us. He says, what I meant to say was, what does a future heavyweight champ have to do to become the greatest over Stipe? Would breaking the 3-defense record do it, or something? Yeah, I mean, I think breaking this, again, it's a number of things. I think breaking the title defense record would help. Again, maybe it's Ngannou. I think Ngannou beating Stipe in the rematch would go a long way. You know, you always want to beat the guy who was, considered the best. It's not a prerequisite, but if you get the chance, it always helps. And then, yes, I think 3 straight defenses, 4 straight defenses, that's really how you need to go. These things matter to people. Though, I think, as we mentioned with the with sort of the Khabib talk, title defenses don't always measure how run was, because the UFC decides you fight for titles. You could be fighting world class, world title level opponent for like 2 years before getting a title shot, right? So title defenses are great and they look cool. And again, if you're like GSP, like perfectly timed, you fight all your great opponents while you're champion, but it's really, really out of your control. So I look at Ngannou's record already. He's been a lot of great guys. If he never records more than two consecutive title defenses, like, if should he beat Stipe, how far does it bump him down? I don't know. You know, I don't know if it bumps him down that much. So I don't know. Just something to consider.
The resume question is interesting, because look at Francis's resume. I mean, that's just as impressive, I think, you know, especially the dominance of Francis' wins too. Yeah, if you go title fights, yeah, of course, Miocic just has it, man. And you know what? Once this fight happens Saturday, and once John Jones finally gets a real fight at heavyweight, then, man, we're gonna be talking about this ad nauseum. So,
I can't wait. I hope I'm not. I hope I'm not on that episode. I'll tell you.
Yeah. Same.
Oh, please, Jose, please be back and get some poor sucker like Jed Meshew or Matt Wells or something to be stuck answering those questions. From 1982, I know this is more interesting for Dad. Weight cutting. We heard the explanation from Julia Stolyarenko that the reason why she fainted twice on the scale during the official weigh-ins for UFC Vegas 22, saying it wasn't a weight cutting issue, more a fact that she made weight too early. Okay. Now, I know Julia said that she felt fine afterwards. There's no lingering health concerns on her end. However, in your opinion, does the process of weight cutting need to change altogether? Should all the commissions in each state follow California rules when it comes to this issue? I'm going to say yes for now. I'm going to let you guys go ahead first, but I mean, obviously I'm leaning towards yes, but Casey, let me go to you first. What do you think? What do you think of that whole mess? And
so when you talked about the California rules, basically that comes down to a rehydration kind of percentage, whatever your rehydration percentage is, that when they say California rules, is that what he's talking about?
That too. I think California also does. Didn't they also do periodic weigh-ins during fight week? I think they're one of the only commissions that do that.
Yeah,
as well.
They
weigh in during fight
multiple
week
multiple times. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's the percentage. They release the fight night weights publicly. They're the only commission that's doing that. So yeah, there's a few little things they've been doing, which I think are very helpful.
Yeah, I mean, California has got a better idea of it. I mean, the big thing is, if you really want to eliminate a lot of this, you have to do like day of weigh-ins. So fighters will basically can't, they're not going to be doing these massive weight cuts because they know they can't fight safely or strategically well at having a big weight cut only hours before the fight. I think like wrestling does a lot of this too. I'm not sure, but I know amateur MMA, you weigh in the same day. You don't weigh in the day before. So you don't you can't cut lots of weight because you're not gonna have time to rehydrate. The Stolarenko though, I think that was, I think even a few fighters and some nutritionists said, yeah, as bad as that looked, that kind of happens a lot. We just happened to see it on camera this time, and I've heard all the time of fighters fainting during weight cuts, and they actually go on weigh in properly and fight great the next night and win. It's just, yeah, I mean, it was actually, she actually probably did do a safe weight cut, but like she said, she cut weight too early, which is a mistake she made because otherwise, you know, you can make weight on Wednesday, you know. Oh, sorry. Make weight like on, yeah. Did you hear that? I was like,
the demon within. Was
yeah.
The
yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, it's just, yeah, she messed up, and I think it looked a lot worse than what it was. But yeah, it brings up a lot of good questions. And do you guys know why we have weigh-ins the day before rather than the day of? You know why?
Well, I think there's media reasons, but also I heard that some back in the day, like some boxing, did try to do same day weigh-ins, and people still tried to cut stupid amounts of weight. So.
Yeah, I mean it's all for promotional reasons. So they have another they have another day to sell a fight. So the idea is like if you move it closer to the actual fight time, the idea is like you will cut less weight. But I think the rehydration percentages, which I can't speak greatly with good accuracy on, but you would need to bring a nutritionist on, and I think Mark Grimondi knows a lot about this. He's the one that knows a lot about this.
He knows a lot about pro wrestling, and I don't know. I don't know if he's really the guy we want to go to. For anyone who can't, Casey, can we shrink this question down a little bit? For anyone who's just listening, it's this question. This literally, there's a box that's jabbing into my neck and covering the bottom of Alex Sabs's face on our YouTube video. But Alex, I want to go to you because Alex, you were watching this as it went down. You actually had to message me to let me know it happened. I was occupied with something else, so you were watching as it went down. What was your read on this? What I still think, even knowing after that she's fine, I still think it was a super scary situation. And what do you think of kind of her explanation after, and what some other, you know, kind of nutritionists have said about the incident?
Yeah, I agree with Casey where like this stuff happens all the time. I just didn't see it on camera. I mean, when the fact that she was on way too early, I mean, now you're dehydrated. You went to bed. You didn't wake up. You've been dehydrated this whole time. Normally, you know, they're going to probably dehydrate and then get right on the scale and then start rehydrating right afterwards. And it was just, it's too long for the body to go like that. It's just not sustainable. So yeah, that's a mistake. And yeah, obviously something needs to change because for as long as people will be able to drop 25 pounds in a weight cut, they will do it, you know? So you can't leave it to the fighters to make the decision to move up a weight class or to do a healthier weight cut. We've seen time and time again, the fighters aren't always going to make the best decision. It's going to be whatever's best for their career, whatever's going to guarantee them that W the next night. I mean, so yeah, there needs to be way more protocol. I mean, this is serious stuff. You don't want to, you know, mess around with dehydrating your body like that and not being able to properly rehydrate afterwards. So yeah, I'm all for like when you show up to fight week, you need to be at a certain weight percentage, you know, you can't show up too heavy that week and expect to drop a certain amount of percentage of your weight by weigh-ins. That's something that I would look into. So it just seems like a no-brainer to me that there needs to be more regulation on this.
Yeah, the California Commission is definitely on the right track. We're not saying they've fixed weight cutting or anything. There's always people that are going to find new ways to kind of try and game the system. But this certainly, the things they've been doing, certainly make things more difficult. I don't know how many fighters they've actually been able to get to move. I know they've at least recommended to at least several fighters to move up. I don't know how many have actually done it, because it is the commission has kind of made it clear, like, this is our recommendation. We are not forbidding them from fighting if they don't change weight class for the next fight. I guess if it's chronic, then maybe they would. But so far, I haven't heard any follow-up where they've, like, forced anyone to stay up. One championship, also has some hydration testing that they do to make sure fighters don't get too big. Their whole process is a little bit shrouded in mystery. I wish there was more disclosure there with sort of how their weigh-ins are done, things like that. But the theory of it is good. So I think if you take ideas from there, take ideas from California, guys, we might be able to solve this. And of course, as you guys kind of both touched upon, the fighters themselves have to really fix this culture, because again, as long as it's the prisoner's dilemma, right? As long as one prisoner thinks they'll get a little less jail time than the other, then they have no reason to compromise. So yes, it sucks, but breaking I do news. Think we are, breaking yeah news. Go ahead breaking is this news. Legit I saw this is this legit
Jessica Penne.
Is this legit?
Yep.
I see a random YouTube comment. I want to.
Her opponent was it Hannah Goldie?
Hannah Goldie, correct.
Yeah, she just Instagrammed that she's out of the fight because of COVID. Because of the COVID.
Okay. So we are maybe down to 10, potentially 9, depending on the status of the Young Morales fight.
I was so looking forward to Jessica Penne's return.
Oh my! Her first fight in over 1,400 days. 1,400 days.
That's like a century.
In MMA time?
Yeah.
I think most people didn't realize she was still with the promotion. Obviously, there was a USADA suspension in there. But, very unfortunate for herself and Hannah. That fight will not go down.
You hear how I love how Dominic Cruz, in multiple interviews, kind of came to Jessica Penny's defense and say basically she just got royally screwed. But Jessica, God dang it, man. I was 4 really looking year forward to that fight. God dang it.
4 year ban. It was a second infraction. You got a four. I don't know. Did she end up? It was reduced. Okay. It was reduced from 4 years. I'm sorry, to 20 months. That's still a long time. 20 months, a long time in a fighter's career. Yes. Yes, and I've heard this is maybe more USADA shenanigans. So yeah, very, very bad news. So hopefully, but again, hopefully if there's nothing wrong on her end, we will see Jessica Penne compete again soon.
Yeah, but that's a weight cut, that's fight camp, that's money. You know, it's a lot of... I know for fans, all we care about, like, as long as you get in the cage and punch. But, man, there is so much more outside. Like, that for that 15 minutes, it's just like 15,000 hours to get ready for that 15 minutes. Yeah. And
Has she been running an OnlyFans? She has been running an OnlyFans, right? Mm-hmm. I think...
Yeah,
I believe she was one of the first fighters. I could be wrong. I do remember though that when I think that's how I first heard about OnlyFans. I swear it was.
Oh, that's how you heard about it.
This is a long time ago. This is before.
Wait.
All right, listen. Just because
you were worried about. Hold on. Hey, am I allowed to say pissed?
No, hold on.
Is that too bad? And now you're like, OnlyFans, guys.
OnlyFans is a legitimate venture, all right. And just because I have my own OnlyFans now does not mean that I like follow all these other OnlyFans and that I'm hip to the OnlyFans culture. I'm very new to this, all right. But yeah, you guys subscribe $5 a month, okay? Very low price for it. Or annual, if you can survive annually, 18% off.
That's
use
cheap.
Use code Candy Lee, and you will, that's with a K, Candy Lee, and you'll get 20% off. No, but I just want to bring it up because I do see there's that, you know, there's this whole discourse like, oh, the fighters, women fighters specifically, I guess they're the ones that are starting most of the OnlyFans, shouldn't do like OnlyFans. I'm like, what? I'm like, They're making money for it. It's their decision to put whatever they want on there. And some of them made the point, a lot of them are probably making more money from OnlyFans than they make with the UFC. So make of that what you will, guys. And so
listen,
I'm fully supporting.
Listen, if men can make money on OnlyFans, they'd all be doing it
would.
In a heartbeat. Give
of
me a break.
Of course they would. Derek Lewis would be charging $19.99 a month for his OnlyFans if he thought that... he could, you know, whatever, post memes and whatever, belly pics on there or what have you. I don't know what Derek Lewis would put. YouTube, shout out in the YouTube comments what you think. Oh, no, wait, no, don't actually. Don't do that. I'm sorry. Don't do that. Well, but that's my mini OnlyFans rant. Fighters,
that was a mini whoever. Rant? That was a thesis,
that was
man. That was a doctorate, man. That was like...
if I was Jose, that would have been three times longer. Come on. So, no, Yeah, there's no criticism at all of fighters who are doing OnlyFans.
Wait, how do we go from that?
Because Jessica Penne, I'm saying Jessica Penne has probably been, among other things, like sponsorships that have stuck with her, is probably making some money to OnlyFans, and good for her. She hasn't fought since 2017. Guys, that was her. She's a professional UFC fighter, and is probably not getting a lot of income from the UFC over the last 4 years. I don't think that's a bold statement. So, what do we got?
Fans, if you like a fighter and you want to support them outside of the cage, subscribe to their OnlyFans, or I don't know, buy a T-shirt or something from them. I know it's a pro wrestler thing, but I don't know if I think fighters should do more. Like, I don't think fighters sell enough T-shirts on their own. Like, I like how Angela Hill is real good about that. She has a store on Pro Wrestling Tees. Fighters, sell more shirts. People, like, I don't know. That's how you do it.
It's cheaper than a pay-per-view.
Yeah. Slightly more expensive than the monthly subscription to regular Alex's OnlyFans. So,
promo code Candy Lee. All right, I'm just saying. MMG2K20. Thanks for chiming in. As always, this is Justin Sane. He spelled it Justin Sane. Justin, the name Justin, and nice. Sane, S-A-N-E. He said a year ago, Gaethje is one of the first names he mentioned when it comes to the lightweight division and fighting for the title. He is arguably the most exciting MMA fighter ever, and he is touted as the guy who might be able to beat Khabib. 1 year later, how has he all of a sudden become the odd man out? Where does he go from here? Surely he is one win away from a title shot. So yes, the lightweight division has sorted itself out somewhat after, thank goodness, the retirement of Khabib has been accepted by Dana White and the UFC. So now we can all move on with our lives. It has been accepted. You know, yeah, there's a lot of paperwork. You retire in October, you know, you're not officially retired till like, you know, 4 months later. That's how these things work. So Alex, what do you think? How did Justin get left out of all these, these sweet, sweet lightweight matchups?
Two words. Here's what changed for Justin Gaethje. Conor McGregor came back, threw a wrench in the gears. Everything has to be McGregor-centric, you know? So, Dustin Poirier passed up on the title fight to fight McGregor. Smart move. I would have done the same. And, that's it. I don't know. That's what happens. You got to stay relevant. You got to stay in the headlines, and he didn't do that. And he'll get back there. You know, it'll happen. The news cycle will switch, and all of a sudden it'll be all about Gaethje again. Come around. That's how it works.
That McGregor factor just throws everyone's lives into upheaval, including ours, whenever that guy rears his head. Casey, what do you think? Is it that simple? Two words, Conor McGregor?
No, I don't think it's that. Actually, Conor McGregor is part of it, but I just think Charles Oliveira fights for cheaper. That's all.
Oof.
I mean... This is prize fighting. The UFC is a business before anything. They are a business that is here to make money. And Charles Oliveira fights for a lot cheaper than Justin Gaethje.
Look, that's just a fact. That is, listen, this is the sort of the price of success in the UFC when you become a top name. Look at Jorge Masvidal. Jorge Masvidal fought himself into a prime money-making position. Suddenly, the UFC does not seem as eager to just, you know, throw any fight Jorge Masvidal's way. And at the same time, on Jorge Masvidal's side, he's not eager to just accept any fight. Now there's a price tag, a brand name that's coming the way. Justin Gaethje, 2 years ago, throw any name in front of him, give him the reasonable paycheck. He's down the clown. He's right in there. But guess what? Now he's former interim champion, Gaethje.
Yeah, and I don't want to hear any crap from fans saying basically, oh, well, Gaethje's coming off a loss and stuff. It's like, so? It's like Jose Aldo got a title fight off a loss. Masvidal is getting a title fight off a loss. I mean, like, what are you talking about, man? It's like, no, clearly there was something that went on behind the scenes where the money wasn't agreed upon between both sides, between the fighter and the UFC, Gaethje and the UFC, and Oliveira. They went for Oliveira, and that's all. That's the only thing that makes sense to me. Sorry, go on.
Go ahead. Yep. Let's not forget Michael Chat. Yeah. Go.
Well, obviously the Conor part with and Dustin wanting to fight Conor, and obviously the way the contracts are set up, how Dustin is going to get more money off a potential Conor victory than he would off a title fight, and maybe even for Dustin, he's like, you know, for Dustin is like, oh, that's just a in his mind a more a fight he can go into more confidently than saying fighting Justin Gaethje, Oliveira, or Chandler. So I think that's pretty much what we're kind of talking about, those four guys, as far as fighting for that title. Here we are. The Conor belt is worth more than the lightweight title fight, which is,
we knew that.
I mean, we knew that, but that they need to make a belt. There should be like I beat Conor belt. Let's just do that. They made a BMF belt. Wouldn't you buy how many UFC replica I beat Conor McGregor belts could they sell? I think way more than
I don't even want to think about it. What? I don't want to go down to my local mall and I will sell when we can. That's an official. That,
to me, that's a kind of unofficial championship. If you beat Conor McGregor, you kind of have an unofficial title. I really think.
I mean, more people will probably, I mean, there's probably people who think that Dustin Poirier is the UFC lightweight champion now because he beat McGregor in January. Yeah. I feel like, oh, Dustin Poirier won the UFC, he's the best in the UFC now? Oh,
dude, Floyd Mayweather got a belt for beating Conor McGregor.
He did, yes.
He did. I'm not kidding.
What do you guys think is next for Gaethje? Does he have to wait? Does he have to wait for the rest of these matches to shape up? There are names out there who are unbooked. I mean, I know who I want to see him fight. I've been campaigning for this fight for a while, but I want to hear kind of if you guys got any names you want to shoot out there first.
For Gaethje, I know there's got to be.
Give me it. I really want to see him fight Rafael Dos Anjos.
This week on The Pitch, would you like fries with that?
People are what make franchises run. The person who knows the business inside and out.
Yep.
Not someone who came off Wall Street because their check clears. Franchairs is the first investment marketplace where people can invest in franchises.
So you said $800 billion is what this market is a year. And hundreds of businesses are actually franchised businesses.
Thousands.
Thousands and thousands.
There are more brands franchised than there are stocks on the NASDAC.
Oh.
You're raising a $4 million price round.
And what are the terms on that?
The $19 million post-money valuation.
Yeah. And do you not think that the valuation is a little frothy?
This week, things get frothy when Kenny Rose brings a new alternative investment class to retail investors. Go right now and subscribe to The Pitch wherever you listen to podcasts.
You really want to see that?
I really want to see that fight.
Are you a big RDA fan? I'm a
huge RDA fan. Yeah.
Like you're like, it's like, I got, it's like RDA is on Embedded. I got to watch this.
RDA is getting his hair cut. Yeah, I'm in.
I'm in.
I think that's it. Why such a lack of enthusiasm for this matchup?
Who am I missing?
Unbooks that are in his range. Mm-hmm. There's really not that many. Again, there's a lot of great lightweights that are coming up, but that are kind of, like you said, worth the time and Gaethje's time and money.
Ferguson Makhachev, did that kind of get? Was that like a real?
No, thing? It's Ferguson Dariush is reportedly happening. I don't know if that's
I like that.
Yeah, that is happening. Yeah,
dude, I love the idea of Gaethje Makhachev. Is it Makhachev? Is that what we're going with?
Makhachev. Really? Makhachev? Oh yeah. Well, I think a lot of people like that possibility as well. The only thing is, I think Makhachev and Gaethje are both dominance Omegas, I would imagine.
Well, so was Habib.
That's for the title, though. That's for the world title.
You're right.
That's the thing. I think it's possible. But I imagine they sort of have a world title or no inter.
That's probably right. Yeah. Right.
Iaquinta, whenever he comes back,
it's a fight. Yeah, sure.
I mean, love it. It is a fight. Alex, have any ideas, any suggestions we should prefer? Iaquinta RDA, or just wait for one of these other matchups? What do you think?
Let's go Iaquinta. I love Iaquinta. He's one of my favorites. Yeah. He went 5 rounds with Khabib. Let's go. Do it.
I do like Iaquinta. I like Iaquinta more than RDA. Even though RDA ranking wise makes more sense for just my personal entertainment, which is really all that matters. I go Iaquinta too.
I think RDA is more competitive too. I would think Gaethje might smoke Iaquinta, but
I think that's where they RDA. Fight the fights. I think he smokes RDA too.
But. Smokes him? Smokes him?
Smokes.
How dare you?
And we know Gaethje likes to smoke. He talks about it.
This is a former world champion. What do we got? Jen Mac, RDA OnlyFans is money well spent. Well, I'll have to check that out.
We'll check it out.
Thank you for the recommendation, GenMech. That's a lie. I'm a huge RDA fan, so I can just verify that. Yeah.
All right, let me go make some more questions. We got time for a few more. We got to go a little faster.
We've covered a lot of questions.
Yeah.
I think we've done a great job. We got another from Tristan Gordet. Francis Ngannou's adjustments. Heading into this title fight this Saturday, do you think Francis Ngannou will make the necessary adjustments against Stipe? Coming off his loss to Stipe back in 2018, Francis said he learned a lot from that fight, said that he's been working on his takedown defense. He will also have Kamaru Usman in his corner, who's been training with him leading up to this title fight. So we've got experience from the first fight. We have a world champion in his corner who just so happens to be an excellent wrestler. Casey, what do you think? Do you think we'll see? I don't know. There's a lot to gauge from the five fights he's had since then. The Lewis, if you even want to count the Lewis fight. But what do you think based on what we're hearing from his camp and the adjustments they're making?
Francis Ngannou is like kind of the most amazing anomaly of a fighter, because everything was like, well, obviously he's the best, he's the most dangerous striker, but you just gotta take him down. And it's like, but yet Francis Ngannou has completely crushed the two best wrestlers in the heavyweight division. He never fought DC, but he fought Kane and Razor Blades, destroyed him and stuff. But of course, those guys never even got a chance to go for a takedown because they got hit with so many fists. So that's the crazy part. Francis Ngannou, we're not counting the Derek Lewis fight. That was just a stupid, horrible 15 minutes. I never want to speak about it again. But post that, his four victories in a total of less than 4 minutes against top five heavyweights is just unreal. But at the same time, we literally learn nothing about Francis Ngannou, which is the most amazing thing. Like, how do you fight four top dudes in the UFC and we learn nothing about you? And so we're just kind of going on assumptions here. We're like, well, I just assume Francis is taking this seriously and has learned from his past failures. And speaking of the first Stipe fight, and I'm gonna say he did learn from this. I mean, the fact that he lost that one fight doesn't mean he loses his next fight. I mean, I know a lot of people say, well, no, this fight's gonna go the same way. It's like, I don't see this fight going the same way. I think Francis is gonna learn a lot from this, and I think it's gonna be a very different fight. I don't think this is gonna be a 30-second, you know, boom boom Francis wins type fight, but I really heavily favor Francis in this fight. And I think he will make the defense. Yeah, I think he will make the adjustments.
He is currently -120 favorite, according to Typology, so very, very slight. But 57% of Typology voters are leaning towards Miocic. So, Alex, I'm going to rephrase the question slightly for you. Do you think it's important that he has made these adjustments and that he is going to have to show off his kind of wrestling defense and getting up off his back and things like that? Or is it just a matter of him implementing what he does best first and just cracking Stipe? And again, like he did in his past four fights, completely removing any sort of wrestling or grappling from the equation. What do you think? Is it important that he has adjusted and he's showing, or that he just does him, that he's Francis does Francis?
Yeah, I hope, and that's exactly what I was thinking this whole time. I hope he learned something, but at the same time, I hope he doesn't forget what makes Francis Ngannou Francis Ngannou. Sometimes, and we see this all the time, when a striker's facing a really amazing wrestler, they're focusing so much on the wrestling and the takedown defense and how do I do this, that they forget to implement their game plan. You know, you don't always want to just, you don't want to adjust too much to your opponent and to, you know, just focus on defending from them. You want to also make sure that you're getting your game plan out there. So, and I don't think Ngannou's going to fall victim to this. I think Ngannou's learned something, and I'm with Casey. I think Ngannou's going to get it done. It's just, that's just how it's, you know, playing out in my head. And I don't know. That's, yeah, I'm running out of things to say with 50-hour mark. My brain's like.
Alex Savas, first round knockout, second round knockout. What do you think?
First or second? Does it make it to the, I think.
First
I
don't or think we second go to the third. Round knockout?
Yeah.
Wow, for Francis Ngannou. Okay, well, I mean, I'm leaning towards Ngannou as well. So I'll have an official prediction on Friday. I'm sure we'll do a preview show, and I actually have to write these out, and so you guys will see those by Saturday morning. But yeah, I don't see myself deviating from that either. I'm going Ngannou probably first for second round finish. So, but hey, I did the same thing. I think I and a lot of people, I think, predicted the same thing ahead of the first fight. So look, there's a reason we've
been talking about. And that's not a bad prediction. Have you got a chance to rewatch the first fight?
I remember I thought up until I think the fourth round, I'm like, I thought Ngannou had a chance the whole time. Yeah. I was like, he absolutely has a chance.
And the craziest part is like after that fight, it's after 25 minutes. And if you were just to show up right when that fight ended, you would think Francis Ngannou won. Because the Francis Ngannou was like, well, he's tired, but he looked fine. And Stipe was just exhausted, which is fine. You know, he fought 25 minutes, but he was just like, blah. Like, he looked like he got hit by a Ford Escort, but survived. And the Ford Escort ran out of gas, unfortunately. You know, fortunately for Stipe. But I think this Ford Escort would be a little more efficient with its gas this time. And we'll win.
You really took that metaphor a long way, and I'm glad you did.
Thank you,
Ford. I hope that check is in the mail for Casey.
Yeah,
it's a fine motor vehicle. It's a fine motor vehicle. Five star safety rating. I shouldn't say it. I'm gonna Ford. Get sued. I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't. I am sorry.
We're live chat brought to you by Ford. This is
we cannot say that legal.
No, not that Ford, like a
Vox legal.
Yeah. By Fjords. By Fjords. The water. You know what? You know Fjords are.
You're getting an email from Vox Legal right now saying you cannot.
Yeah, luckily for them, I don't check my email.
Casey, what else? What do we think? One more?
Yeah, one more.
One more. Two more. What do you think? You're the truck. You're driving the Ford Escort. You're driving the fine Ford vehicle.
Is this even a question?
I like this question. Okay, let's see this one.
Okay. Oh, well, I'm terrible for this one, but okay. Off the record. Oh, this from key of D minor. Off the record. If we were in a bar and you could tell tales, air quotes, off the record about the UFC. How much would we be shocked on a scale of 1 to 10? And parentheses, I'm not asking for the stories here, just the shock value of your secrets. So I am pretty worthless for this. I do not know a lot of fighters, coach, manager secrets, at least as far as you guys listening and watching know. So I don't know. I can't really speak on this. I mean, there's certainly things I've heard, but nothing super inside. Alex, how about yourself?
No, I think the UFC does a really poor job of keeping secrets. So I feel like we all know a lot of things, but I really want to hear Casey's answer to this on a scale of 1 to 10.
I was going
to
say, Casey has lived the life and knows fighters, managers, and things inside and out. Jose, I'm sure, would have some great stories as well. So I almost wish, for the first time today, I wish Jose was here. That's not normal. But Casey, what is your scale of 1 to 10? Scale of 1 to, so remember, it's not how scary the story is, but how shocked would people be? Because Alex was a big point. A lot of these stories are kind of out there.
Am I talking to just a regular sports fan? Am I talking to a hardcore fan?
Good question.
If I'm talking to just a regular sports fan.
Yeah, casual sports fan.
Who's kind of heard about UFC and they go, hey, man, like Kimbo Slice, Brock Lesnar, man. You know, they're pretty cool.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah. Do you practice UFC, bro?
Yeah,
that I would give it
a solid 9 then for off the record.
Wow.
For hardcore fans, I'll give it a 6.
Now, when you say, again, we don't want to go into, like you said, we don't necessarily want to tell.
No, because I will get letters from Fox Legal if I do go off the record.
But you mean as far as things as like how negotiations go, weight cutting, which you mentioned before. We mentioned like if people knew about, holy crap, all the weight cutting stories that they don't hear, and how common it is that fighters kind of, you know, suffer fainting spells and those kind of deleterious effects of weight cutting. And yeah, just, stuff like that, right? And negotiate, yeah.
Honestly, the money part of the sport. That's big.
What
I'll say about this off the record thing, it's like once the mics and cameras are turned off, you would be, it's kind of shocking how much talk there is about money and how much I'm getting paid for this. Am I getting paid for this? I'm getting paid for that. You know, when fighters, you know, when they're on the camera, you know, like all of us, you know, it's like, you know, like, hey, I'm going to fight, blah, blah, blah. But after that, it's just like, fighting is just part of their life. They still have cars to pay for. They have children, you know, they're thinking about their future. So like, they got to get paid, you know, they got to get paid. And a lot of what you hear off the record is all like, hey, I'm not getting paid. Why am I getting taxed this? You know, it's not fun. It's just, it's a lot of like you don't want to see how the sausage is made. A lot of that.
Yeah, that's really one of the biggest things, I think, when you cross over from being a fan to someone who works in the media, which I imagine is the case with all of us, is you know, we were fans first. And then as you sort of peel away a lot of the layers, your enjoyment of what you're seeing and the product, it diminishes a little bit, which is, again, speaking for myself, I'll say I still love watching MMA. I still love watching the UFC. I know we criticize Dana White. We criticize UFC all the time. We criticize some of the fighters in the UFC. But the art of fighting and the product that is still in there is like still so to me is still is like exhilarating if not more so than the first time I watched it. So I still love watching anime and covering it, but definitely there's aspects of it that you either have to like reconcile yourself with or flat out ignore. Yeah. Honestly, on fight to just not think about, because it sucks. It's some of these aspects of this business suck. Okay. There's just no nice way to put it. So yeah, and I agree. I think if it's money, I think that's the thing that would surprise people the most, the financial side of things, and just generally how a lot of these fighters are living compared to what is presented on screen. You know what I mean? The glamour of the sport, right?
Yeah, yeah. So much of that shock value that this question's about is really about money, and yeah. The shockingly little, and sometimes shockingly how much. It's all over the place. It's crazy.
I mean, I just think about, you know, it's funny. I was watching how they presented Kevin Holland on Saturday. And it's like, oh, he's got this really big shoe collection. He's doing really well. Obviously, he fought, you know, that's the guy who's doing pretty well off in MMA. He fought a lot of time. But look at it this way. He had to fight 5 times in 2020, win some fight bonuses to kind of live this sort of lifestyle that they're presenting. Your average UFC fighter probably does not have a massive shoe collection, is not, you know, driving around a fancy car unless it was set up like a photo shoot or something. And I think, yeah, that is surprising when you see what's presented, the kind of how the videos they show, and then sort of like your average fighter. It's just kind of just like you and me probably and just trying to get by.
Real quick.
One last one. Totally.
Is this a good question?
So many. Do you want one of the quickies? We kind of already talked.
I'm trying to do a quickie.
Oh, yes.
No.
Yeah, yes, yeah. I want to. No. Oh, dude, that's too complicated, I guess. Yeah.
Sorry, no, I don't want to do that one.
Oh, my God. What's going on?
Trying it.
Oh my gosh, this is well, look, for those playing at home, you can pause, and if you want to answer those questions yourself, pause on the screen. Sorry guys, for anyone listening, we just flashed a bunch of questions on screen. Do we want to settle on this one? It's pretty heavy, Casey, and this kind of and it kind of relates to our last kind of what we just talked about.
Yeah, we can read it. There's nothing too much to say about it.
Okay. But. Yeah, so this is a Dan Hardy question. This is from Tan Nguyen on Twitter. What do you think about the Dan Hardy situation? Considering we haven't heard from the female employee side of the story, is it wrong for the UFC to fire Dan without providing a clear explanation? So, first thing I'll say, guys, to give you guys a little bit of background, just from an interview that came out today with Submission Radio. This was transcribed by Submission Radio's Dennis Shkuratov. So thank you, Dennis. You know, Dan Hardy's spoken about it a bunch of times. The UFC has been very quiet about it. And here's what Dan had to say. Sorry, I had this loaded up, actually. He says, it was a disagreement between myself and another employee of the UFC who I feel was being obstructive in helping me do my job. I asked the person why. I felt like I was told a falsehood, which I called them out on. That's my side of it. So this is sort of his side of the confrontation that has been sort of reported in the media. Is it wrong for the UFC to fire Dan without providing a clear explanation? I need to think about this. So I'm gonna chicken out and throw it to one of you guys first. Alex Savas, is it wrong for the UFC to fire Dan without providing a clear explanation?
No, it's not wrong. The UFC is a company and they can fire and hire at will. They can do so without explaining it to the media, without explaining it to the fans. It doesn't really matter. We don't have to hear the female side of the story. As long as whoever was making that decision heard both sides of the story and made the best decision, then that's all that we can do. We hope that that was the right decision as far as all we know. And that's that.
Yeah. As long as there's no like discrimination laws or any like hiring and firing, those type of laws weren't broken. It can be a private matter within the UFC. As someone who loves gossip. Yeah. I want to hear it, you know. As someone who know we want traffic to our website, yeah, we love to hear it, but we don't. It's not necessary. It's a private business matter, and like I said, unless there were law like hiring and firing laws that were broken, but only Dan Hardy knows that, and then that would involve, you know, getting a lawyer and all that stuff. But otherwise, it's just how it is.
Yeah. Listen, as cold as it sounds, if you're you have to weigh the cost and gain of addressing the issue publicly. I don't see what the UFC could gain from commenting on this matter publicly. I don't think Dan Hardy said anything that has necessarily prompted a reaction from them. Like I said, he's given his side of the story, but if I'm the UFC, I'm just kind of like, okay, I'm okay with having that side of the story out there. We've already made our decision. Doing anything further might only make it look bad. So, yeah, I know that's a pretty cold, calculating answer, but that's what the show's all about. That's what the A-Side Live Chat's all about. We're all about, sorry guys, we don't like, at least when I'm around, when Jose's around, you guys can horse around all you want. When I'm around and Alex Savas are around, Alex Savas, all business. She's going to get Dana White to get Larisenko on that commentary desk the next time, the next time she runs into him. So yeah, this is the all business edition of the A side. But Casey, I think that is we'll have to wrap for now.
Yeah. One last question. Correct? One last question. This is a quick.
Oh, good. Yeah. Go ahead.
It's a quick yes or no. Quick yes or no.
Sure. Yeah, of course. Does Stipe get immediate rematch if he loses? Yes, he does, assuming he doesn't retire. Alex?
I don't think so. I think Dana White's frustrated with Stipe isn't as active as he probably wants a heavyweight champion to be.
True. This is true.
If Stipe loses, Francis will fight whoever accepts a cheaper contract, John Jones or Stipe.
Guys, I told you, it's all business. All right, this is all business.
It is all business.
Actually, no, if Jose was here, he'd say the same thing. Who am I kidding? Jose would say the same. Jose's real. Jose would say the same thing. So,
does Stipe deserve one? Yes, if he loses, he does deserve, because it'll be a great trilogy. It'll be a great trilogy. This sport, this like MMA fight, prize fighting is all about trilogy. So yes, a trilogy would make perfect sense. Just like as soon as Connor and Nate 2 happened, the immediate thing afterwards, whoo, can't wait for the trilogy. Never got it. So because Casey, it was all about money. So the rematch should happen if he loses. But we have John Jones there. But we also have who's going to fight for less.
Casey, I wish I had controlled the sound more, because I would have hit a buzzer there, because you said deserve. And we all know the D word does not exist in combat sports. We made it. Oh, thank you. We made it over an hour. If you had said it in the first like 5 minutes of the show, I would have said we got to call the show. That is the rap word. Yes, there is no deserve, but thank you everyone for tuning in. Jose will be back next week.
Thank
Stay
God.
Tuned to MMA. Oh yeah. I have a toothpick in my hand. I don't know why. You can't see it.
It bends.
Stay tuned. I really feel like it emphasizes my point. Stay tuned to MMA Fighting this week, please, for the excellent on-site coverage being provided by Jose, and of course all the other coverage being provided by our site. Thank you, Alex Savas, for joining me on this week's episode, and thank you, Casey, for handling everything in the truck, and thank you everyone for tuning in, whether you're tuning on YouTube or on via podcast platform. So thanks everyone, and have a great rest of the week. UFC 260 on Saturday.
Can you do the thing with Benson and do the whole outro of the toothpick in your mouth now?
What does he do?
Can you flip it? Be careful.
Flip
though.
It.
Oh, no, wait. Save it for the OnlyFans. Save it for the OnlyFans. I'm
no,
out of here.
No, we are not ending with me dying. All right, that's not a good way to end the show.
$4.99 a month. Subscribe now.
AK got his tongue pierced.
Promo code Candy with a K.
Candy Lee with a K.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.